Sometimes we look at wealthy people with a measure of envy. We'd be so relieved to have our bills paid, cash in the bank, and access to all the creature comforts that affluence affords. Well, today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll reminds us that prosperity has pressures and pitfalls all its own. And in fact, in seasons of success, it's tempting to forget our complete reliance on God. Wealth can cultivate arrogance, as though we engineered our own blessings. Today, we'll look at an Old Testament patriarch who modeled humility in success. But first, we begin with prayer.
Our Father, as we attempt to go back to an ancient time in another place, another set of circumstances, a different geography, we realize the relevance of your word, how its principles remain the same, and its application as relevant as this morning's news, even more so. For your word is truth, and your direction is right. And your Spirit is among us to lead us in the way we should go. I pray for all today who are at the crossroads of an important decision. Whatever may be the nature of it, may each one pause and think and consider the crucial question: is this your will or is it mine? Is this what you would have me do, or is it something that I alone would like to do and want to do? Give us sufficient discernment and unselfishness to be open to wherever you may lead us. And we will thank you for that for the rest of our days. Guard us from the common knee-jerk reaction of rushing into something that brings instant gratification, but not spiritual maturity. We are by nature short-sighted. We are by nature selfish. And we are, by nature, prone to wander and to move in a direction that makes us comfortable and even relieved and happy for the moment. And yet we have lived long enough to know the consequences of making choices erroneously. So speak to us in a very special way as we wait upon your Spirit to guide us through your word into the way we should go. Even as the psalmist writes, "For this shall everyone that is godly call upon you in a time when you may be found. Surely in the floods of great waters they will not come near to you. You are my hiding place. You shall preserve me from trouble. You shall compass me about with songs of deliverance." Deliver us, our Father, from pleasing people. And show us in the process what it means to have the courage to draw our life from the vine as you energize us with your light and your leading. May the decision we make in these days yet ahead be pleasing to you. Guide us, our Father, with your eye. May we be so sensitive that we notice the movement of your eye. We trust you, and we express these words to you in the name of Christ, the vine. We pray. Everyone said, Amen.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To search the Scriptures with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download the Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insightworld.org/studies. And now the message called A Decision That Led to a Disaster.
The Bible helps you adjust the sails of life because the winds will often be contrary. As we have already seen in the life of Abraham, sometimes adversity strikes. And then other times, as we will see today, you are then tested with prosperity, which is a far greater test. Now, the one we're going to meet up with in Abram's life at this study in Genesis 13 is the test of prosperity. There are tests connected with that far worse than adversity. In fact, it was Carlyle, the Scottish essayist and historian, who wrote, "Adversity is hard on a man, but for everyone who can stand prosperity, there are 100 who can stand adversity." Maybe that went by a little too quickly. There are 100 who can withstand the tests of adversity to only one or two who can bear up under the tests of prosperity. We do better with adversity, but when things go really, really well, it's easy to become arrogant, self-sustaining, conceited, greedy, and selfish. We don't have to. There are many who aren't, but it's easy to fall into that trap. We're going to notice Abram doesn't go there. Chapter 13, verse 1. So Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev, he and his wife and all that belonged to him, and Lot with him. So he's traveling along with his wife and his nephew, Lot. Next verse. Now Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. He had a lot of bucks, silver and gold, and he had a lot of livestock. There's nothing great about Abram's life that suddenly deserves wealth. He's just failed. How gracious of God to lead him into riches and to have his livestock grow and multiply. And here he is coming back into the land, and on his journey he goes to the Negev. How do we know he was walking with the Lord while rich? Well, keep reading. Came as far as Bethel, the place where his tent had been at the beginning, so he's backtracking between Bethel and Ai, verse 4. To the place of the altar which he had made there formerly, and there, finish the sentence, Abram called on the name of the Lord. Nice. It's nice to see that. Here is a man, eminently wealthy, who still takes time for the Lord. This is no carnal, arrogant man. He is admittedly wealthy, heavy with this world's goods, but he still pauses for prayer. You see, personal riches are not incompatible with holiness in life. Wealth is not evil. Greed is. But there are many who serve Christ who are as unselfish as Abraham proves to be. He is heavy with these riches. In fact, he's not alone. Verse 5 tells us that his nephew was also heavy. Lot, who went with him, also had flocks and herds and tents. So he's got plenty. And this is where there is a decision made that leads to tragic consequences. And the land could not sustain them while dwelling together, for their possessions were great that they were not able to remain together. Remember, there had been a severe famine in the land. Who knows in what condition they were or how much was available by way of the new growth that had now begun. And we've got the herdsmen of Abram and the herdsmen of Lot, both of whom have large number of cattle, and so there is a strife, verse 7 tells us, between the herdsmen. And along with that, you've got the enemy. Canaanites, the Perizzites, are dwelling in the land. So this has the potential of leading to a real conflict. Riches can do that. Riches shared by a family can do that, which is part of the reason many who are in that category turn to greed. They, before long, stop trusting anyone else, and they realize they better hold on to what they have, and it turns into another kind of idol, which I'll get to in a moment. Now, the most natural thing was for Abram to say to Lot, "Hey, man, beat it. I'm the uncle, you're the nephew. You make it on your own, buddy. This is my land, all of it, the Lord has promised me, and I'm going to claim it all." So lots of luck. And he shoves Lot out of his life. He didn't do that. I'm impressed with Abram's response. In fact, I like even his words. Verse 8, Abram said to Lot, "Please." That's a nice way to begin. In fact, he says it again in the middle of verse 9, "Please separate from me, please." Look at the kind appeal. Let there be no strife between you and me. And by the way, there's a great-hearted reminder in this. We are brothers. We're family. And look at the unselfish offer. He says, the whole land is out there. You want the area to the left? I'll take what's left on the right. You want what's on the right? I'll take what's on the left. I think that's magnificent of Abram. He didn't have to do that. But he wanted to help Lot get started on his own. You see, the reason he could do that is the land didn't own Abram. He wasn't owned by his livestock. He owned them. And so generosity flowed easily because he wasn't greedy. And I'm going to speak straight to all of us. Notice the pronoun, all of us. It is easy in our society to cultivate greed. I see it so often I could scream. Thankfully, there are some wonderful exceptions, but that's also the tragedy that's the exception rather than the rule. We who are blessed with this world's goods could easily forget those who are in need. And we who are in need can easily envy those who were blessed. And the Lord has decided to keep us all together. And I will tell you one of the secrets of breaking with your habit of greed, if that is a battle for you, and that's generosity. And I know it goes against your nature. It just goes against the way we probably brought up. I remember my dad saying to me, "Everything you have, you need to take good care of. You need to hang on to it, because you'll never know, there's maybe a time when you won't have it." And he meant well by that, but there wasn't a lot of generosity taught there. And maybe you weren't raised to be generous. It reminds me of an experience I had when I was speaking to a group of men in a rather nice setting. It was a kind of a dress-up affair. All of us were in suits and ties, and I even forget where it happened, but I'll never forget what happened there. I was meeting some of the men afterwards, and I happened to see a man I didn't know, and I said, "Wow, that is one gorgeous tie. Man, that's true. Obviously, your wife picked it out." And we laughed about that. He said, "You like this tie?" I said, "Yeah, it's beautiful." He said, "Here." And he takes it off. And he hangs it out, says, "Here, it's yours." He throws it around my neck. I'm like, "No, I like your coat too." "No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that." I've never had anybody give me a tie like that. I used that illustration in the first service. I had 7 men tell me what a great looking tie this is I'm wearing today. No, I'm serious. Now, that man thought, he didn't even think a second before he had that tie off his neck. You know what that told me? That tie didn't mean that much to him. Or maybe it meant a lot and he wanted me to enjoy it even better. Best of all, it represented spontaneous, unexpected generosity. Richard Foster writes about this in his book with a penetrating title, Money, Sex, and Power. In the section of money, he writes, we need to dethrone money. It's a good word, dethrone. For the sake of faithfulness to Christ, we need to find ways to shout no to the God of money. We must dethrone it. So he says with tongue in cheek, so step on it, yell at it, laugh at it, list it way down on the scale of values, certainly far below friendship and cheerful surroundings, and engage in the most profane act of all. Give it away. How's that for a novel idea? You say that to those who are greedy, they will do nothing but frown back at you. I've worked hard for this. This is my money. Wait a minute. Last time I checked, that little pulse in your heart is a grace gift from God. When it stops, your money flies away, and your selfish kids get it. And then they start living like you've taught them to live. Then he tells this story. Not long ago, we had a swing set, not one of those store-bought aluminum things, but a real custom-made job. Huge steel pipes and all. But our children would soon be beyond swing sets, so we decided it would be good to sell it at a garage sale. My next decision was what price to put on it. I went out in the backyard and looked it over. It should bring a good price, I thought to myself. In fact, if I touched it up with paint just a bit, I could up the ante some. And if I'd fixed the seat on the glider, I could charge even more. All of a sudden, I began to monitor a spirit of covetousness within me. And I became aware of how really dangerous it was spiritually. Well, I went into the house and rather tentatively asked my wife, Carolyn, if she would mind if we gave the swing set away rather than selling it. No, no, not at all, she responded quickly. I thought to myself, rats. But before the day was out, we had found a couple of young children who could make good use of it, and we gave it to them. And it didn't even have new paint on it. The simple act of giving crucified the greed that had gripped my heart, and the power of money was broken for the time being. May I urge you to cultivate a spirit of generosity. Just great-hearted generosity. You and I, because we own our own home, have more than my 90% of this world. Because we drive more than one car, we're in another category entirely from the great majority. I don't say that to shame us. I say to bring perspective. How easy to forget how blessed we are. And what a joy we're missing, since the one we worship once said it's more blessed to give than to receive. And so true. So true. That's why when things like little shoe boxes are to be filled with toys for children for Christmas, we don't hesitate to pour ourselves in that little act of generosity. You don't even know the child, but you want that child to know the joy of receiving, and you get the greater joy of giving. I have discovered over the years of life that few experiences bring Cynthia and me more pleasure than moments when we just give it. Maybe possessions, maybe an amount of money, it may be to help some student, whatever. I say that not in any way to be self-serving. The Lord knows I don't deserve that kind of praise. But I'll tell you, we are learning in our years on this earth, there are few pleasures that meet the pleasure of generosity. Just give. Just learn to give it. Give it. Release it. So here's Abraham with all this land. And here's Lot, not very mature, and he says to Lot, hey man, you pick what you want. What do we read? Watch closely. Verse 10. Lot lifted up his eyes and saw. I have that word circled for a reason. You may want to do that as well. He saw all the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered. Everything, everywhere. Added a little later, this was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Why, it was like the garden of the Lord, meaning the Garden of Eden. That's how lush it was. It was like the land of Egypt as you go towards Zoar. The grass is grown high, and the trees are luxuriant, and the water flows freely because of all of that rain. It was well watered everywhere. It was like the garden of the Lord. How rarely you read those words in the Old or New Testament. It's like the Garden of Eden. I mean, it was like an enormous oasis in the middle of this otherwise parched land. And Lot looks down there and we read, so Lot chose. I've circled that word. He saw. He chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed. I've circled that. He saw, he chose, he journeyed eastward. Thus they separated from each other.
Without praying and asking for God's guidance, Lot chose the Valley of the Jordan. It was a decision that led to a disaster. And let me urge you to be listening tomorrow when Chuck Swindoll tells us the rest of the story. To conduct your own study apart from the daily program, you'll find related resources, including books, CDs, and downloadable audio files at insightworld.org/store. These Old Testament accounts are given by God to illustrate the wisdom of following His ways and the price we pay when choosing our own path. Once we truly understand the outcome of obedience, we're motivated to stay the course. Well, for countless people around the world, including you, Insight for Living has become a reliable source for truth, courage, and inspiration. Because we know that's the case, let me boldly invite you to join in this mission to provide this daily program on your station and over the internet. Giving a donation, no matter the size, will be multiplied many times over. As people hear the truth, apply it to their lives, and find courage to persevere, no matter what challenges they may face. Here's the number to call. If you're listening in the United States, dial 1-800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org. As an expression of our thanks for your donation today, we're pleased to send the powerful real-life story of Carol Kent. Carol's book is titled, When I Lay My Isaac Down, Unshakable Faith in Unthinkable Circumstances. She details the horrific events that led to her son's incarceration. It's a story of love, loss, and redemption. Carol's book was selected because it clearly demonstrates God's faithfulness, even at our lowest moments. So be sure to request a copy of When I Lay My Isaac Down when you give a donation to support the ministry of Insight for Living. If you're listening in the United States, call us at 1-800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org. Once again, if you're listening in the U.S., just call 1-800-772-8888 or go to insight.org.
Hi, I'm Chuck Swindoll. I'm hoping you'll join me for a one-week adventure to the Alaskan frontier.
Next summer, leave your worries behind as you sail into the Alaskan coast. Join us on the upcoming 2018 Insight for Living Ministries cruise.
I can't think of a better way to re-engage and connect with your family than spending a full week together exploring, adventuring, laughing, digging into the scriptures for practical wisdom on family matters. And all of that on the backdrop of God's majestic creation.
Reflect on His power and beauty. Restore your marriage. Renew your love and reignite your faith through Chuck Swindoll's powerful Bible teaching.
Step into the quaint seaside villages of that wild frontier. Create a world of memories you'll never forget.
Come along on the Insight for Living Summer Cruise to Alaska, June 30th through July 7th, 2018. Call 1-888-447-0444 today or visit us online at insight.org/events.
The Insight for Living Tour to Alaska is paid for and made possible by only those who choose to attend.
I'm Dave Spiker. Hear Chuck Swindoll's conclusion to a message about a decision that led to a disaster, Tuesday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, A Decision That Led to a Disaster, was copyrighted in 2012 and 2014, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2014 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.